A phrase essential to and used in all of our ceremonies is Mitakoye Oyasi, which means all my relatives. Its definition reminds us of that connection. Many of our stories about animals refer to them as the elk people, or the bear people, or the bird people, not because we were anthropomorphizing them, but because in our language, the designation of people was not limited to humans. This kinship, this sense of connection, also served to remind us of our place in a great scheme of life. We were not the fastest or the strongest of creatures, but we had the ability to reason that enabled us to survive the same way that a bear's strength, an antelope's speed, or an eagle's keen eyesight sustained existence. And like many of our fellow beings, we lived by hunting. We became nomadic hunters because there was no choice. If the bison wasn't one of the reasons we migrated onto the plains, it quickly became the focal point of our survival. The bison was the greatest nomad on the plains, and our association with and dependence on it turned us into nomads as well. As the bison went, so did we. There were moments when my ancestors felt invincible, especially as they watched the great numberless herds of bison. There were millions and millions of them, and only a few thousand of us. Because we had learned to be wise enough to take only what we needed, those herds seemed like an endless supply. We were the largest tribe on the northern plains, and we were pushing against the foothills of the Rocky Mountains by the time we began to have consistent contact with a newcomer who would change our lives. By the early to mid-1700s, the Sichangu Lakota were in what is now south-central South Dakota. Having established a roughly triangular territory, the base of which dipped down into current north-central Nebraska. In 1803, the first organized explorers led by Lewis and Clark skirted the eastern edge of that territory as they went north. In the late 1720s and early 1730s, a group of French explorers made their way through our territory as well and buried an inscribed lead plate on a hill near what is now the capital of the state, Pierre. In 1837, we, as well as the men then far to the north, experienced the foreshadowing of things to come. By the 1830s, the Euro-Americans had navigated almost the entire length of the Missouri River with their steamboats and established several landings. In early summer of 1837, a steamboat from St. Louis traveled north on the river and stopped several times. One of its stops was at what is now southern South Dakota, at the Whetstone Landing, near the present town of Pickstown. Another, and the last, was at Fort Union in what is now North Dakota. Trade goods, including blankets and a few travelers, were offloaded at both stops, along with the smallpox virus carried by the travelers or the goods, or both. By the end of that summer, about 2,000 Lakota, as well as a like number of Mandans who lived in earth lodges near Fort Union, had died from smallpox. That summer's epidemics would not be the last on the northern plains, but we learned that there were consequences from contact with the newcomers. The first whites had come alone or in small groups, but that changed in the late 1840s. Then began a 20-year migration that would bring hundreds of thousands of whites across the southern end of Lakota territory. Not only hundreds of thousands of people, but their horses, mules, oxen, wagons, and household goods. They also brought more disease, in an arrogant mindset that the lands across which their 2,000-mile trail stretched were empty and available for the taking. The Oregon Trail began in western Missouri, went across northeastern Kansas, southern Nebraska, southeastern Wyoming, southern Idaho, and on into northeastern Oregon, ending at Portland. In western Nebraska and southeastern Wyoming, the trail crossed Lakota territory. The migration interrupted the flow of life on the plains, altering the migration pattern of animals, especially the bison. The land along the corridor of the trail was dotted with the graves of the thousands of immigrants who lost their lives to accidents, starvation, and sickness. Household goods such as beds, trunks, stoves, tables, and so on were discarded and left, and animal carcasses were left to rot where they died. The white immigrants were afraid of attack from the tribes who lived along the trail, and that fear resulted in the first of several treaty negotiations at a place in southeastern Wyoming known to us as Horse Creek, and to the whites as Fort Laramie. Our fears regarding the immigrant travel were disease, and a possibility that some of the travelers might decide to take up permanent residence on our lands. Both fears were realized, of course. Surprisingly, the first contacts we had with the immigrants were friendly, or at least there was no outright conflict. We were curious about them, obviously, and we traded with them. But that would change all too soon. The United States Peace Commissioners, with whom we treated at Fort Laramie, assured us that the immigrants were just passing through and would need no more space than the width of their wagon wheels. Then they told us it would be in our best interest not to attack them. There were essentially no armed clashes until the U.S. Army attacked us first because of a cow. A Mormon traveling along the trail in 1854 lost or turned loose a cow. It was a pitiful animal from all reports, nothing but a walking bag of bones. The cow wandered into a Sichongo Lakota camp and was shortly dispatched and butchered by a visiting Minikanju Lakota. Unfortunately, the Mormon wanted his cow back. The head man of the village, a wise old man named Conquering Bear, spoke his regrets and offered a horse in trade. The Mormon wanted nothing but his cow. So Conquering Bear increased his peace offering to several horses, all to no avail. Negotiations broke down at that point, and a young army lieutenant named Grattan was sent to the camp to straighten out the matter. His idea of settling the issue was to bring a mountain howitzer with 30 soldiers and open fire. He and 29 of his soldiers were killed in a brief but savage skirmish. Among the casualties on the Lakota side was the beloved headman Conquering Bear. A boy of 14 happened to be visiting relatives in the camp, and he witnessed how the army had tried to handle the situation. That one incident would stay with him the rest of his life. The boy's name was Curly, or Light-Haired Boy. As a young man, he was given the name Crazy Horse. The army retaliated, and about a year later attacked another Sichangu Lakota camp under the leadership of Little Thunder, while many of the men were away hunting. The soldiers commanded by General Harney wiped out the entire camp to teach us a lesson, they said. Conflict came among us and stayed thereafter. We fought to protect ourselves, and from that difficult era emerged many of our heroes, Little Thunder, Conquering Bear, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Gull, Sitting Bull, Spotted Tail, Bigfoot, and a host of other leaders lesser known to Euro-Americans, but no less revered by us. All shared a common dream to preserve the Lakota way of life, and all of them dedicated their lives to it. Many did lay down their lives. Several significant events from 1855 to 1890 shaped our destiny, two of which were the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868 and the discovery of gold in the Black Hills in 1874. The treaty established the entire western half of what is now the state of South Dakota as the Great Sioux Reservation in perpetuity. In addition, we could hunt in what was called unceded territory, encompassing parts of western North Dakota, eastern Wyoming, and northwest Nebraska. It was an arrangement that was workable, but 6 short years later, the treaty was seriously compromised by the discovery of gold in the Black Hills. Prospectors and miners poured into the hills in direct violation of the treaty, adding to the already steady stream of whites into Lakota territory. United States peace commissioners were dispatched to negotiate for the Black Hills, which resulted in the agreement of 1875. That agreement sliced off the western third of the Great Sioux Reservation, which, of course, included the Black Hills. Some stories suggest that the peace commissioners and the Army's representatives coerced older Lakota leaders past their prime and influence to sign the agreement by threatening to transport their people to Oklahoma Territory in the middle of winter.